There are also selective idealizations and manipulations of the, if you like, the forensic facts to do with the death of Marat. So, for instance, Marat was, as is well known, was in his bath because of his paresis, and there is no trace of that on the idealized body that we see in the bath. Rather, there is a very neat, somewhat stigmata-like incision just below the Marat's collarbone, which is the only really sign of, is the only sign of violence on the body, although the bloody water and bloodied sheet lining the bathtub, you know, exaggerate that notion of the violence that's been done to Marat. Various other things were changed by David to make the didactic point about the significance of Marat's death clearer. So, for instance, the letter from Charlotte Corday, which he holds in his hand, is, I believe, a complete fabrication, although Corday did have a letter of introduction in her pocket. In the end, she never needed to use it, and it was never actually handled by Marat himself. She had bought a cheap... I don't know if it was cheap or not, but she'd bought a kitchen knife with an ebony handle in order to do the murder. And this is substituted by an ivory-handled knife for David in order to make the presence of the murder weapon clear, and also to make what's called a chiasmic comparison, a sort of comparison of opposites, if you like, between the ivory handle of the knife and the white quill that Marat holds in his hand, which become evidently that sort of metaphor of the pen and the sword and their relative ethical values. Marat's bathroom was not decorated with a sort of a blank sooty wall or space, and in fact the whole top half of the painting deals in quite elaborate metaphors to do with eternity and idealization and transcendence and resurrection, which is Christian iconography, is something which overlays the death of Marat to quite a significant degree. But I think it's Thomas Crowe, who's one of the leading authorities on David, who has pointed out that, if you like, there is the painting bisects horizontally at the line of Marat's armpit and the top edge of the bath, and kind of below the edge of the bath, everything is kind of material and factual, albeit with some modifications for kind of optical clarity, like substituting ebony for ivory in on the knife handle. But above that level, above the level of the edge of the bath, everything is really about idealization. So it's very often said that Marat's pose is derived from Michelangelo's Pietà, the image of the dead Christ on the knees of the Virgin Mary. And we move from that, certainly Michelangelo-esque interpretation, up into what's basically a kind of non-representational space, or is nearly a non-representational space, the sort of the space of the tomb or the space of eternity or whatever. But I think this is where the notion of Marat being at his last breath becomes crucial, because there is what appears to be a sort of light source on the right-hand side in the upper part of the painting, which I have always read as Marat's departing breath. It's kind of like the motes of dust and the vapour of his breath is kind of caught in a directional light, and you see it kind of dispersing and kind of rolling out into our space as much as anything else, I think. So there is a sense in which the death is being transformed or transmuted both into sort of the eternity of the tomb with the very dark blank space on the left, top left of the painting, but also that Marat's words, his desire to speak, is also somehow refined or sublimated or idealized by his death into something quite impersonal, like a kind of ghost, like a kind of zeitgeist or spirit of the age. I think that works very well with the kind of rhetoric that that David had been producing pretty much since the death of Verratti. And also the notion that this and the death of Le Peletier, which has a similar blank background, were designed to be hung in the National Convention. So both Le Peletier and Marat are witnesses to contemporary political debate. They might be dead, but they are, if you like, the unruly or restless dead whose desire to speak, whose desire for revenge, literally hovers over the contemporary political debates going on in the National Convention in 1793. For that reason, I personally would depart slightly from the emphasis on the Christian iconography of the dead Christ. And undoubtedly, and as T.J. Clarke proves, that metaphor of Marat being like Jesus was certainly in circulation in 1793. But I think they are also very like, when put together as a pair, the Le Peletier and the Marat are like the figures on the Medici tombs by Michelangelo. They represent, and in a sense they represent, the, as I said a minute ago, the restless dead, the dead whose desire for terror, in many ways, needs to be assuaged. They're kind of like ghosts in a classical drama who need blood pouring on the ground before they will rest peacefully. They need a libation of some sort in order to keep them at peace. So I think the Christian iconography is certainly present, and unsurprisingly, as the Republican government had only just sort of, if you like, dismantled the functions of the Catholic Church as a major part of people's cultural life. But also, perhaps less surprisingly, in a way, there's a kind of recourse to classical mythology and classical allusion and the role of the dead in classical literature, which is less about resurrection and more about them being a kind of baleful presence that has to be acknowledged and managed by the living.